Well, hey, Gundam Maniacs, welcome to the Gundam Explained show live. I'm your host, Adam Blue. And today, joining like usual, is just Steven. We went like the past, I think, three shows with people. We haven't had time to ourselves lately.
Yeah, you know, it has felt a little crowded. But no, we've had some great people on, and that's been awesome, honestly.
Yes.
I love having a third chair. But yeah, this week has been crazy because it feels like it's been a while since we've streamed, at least to me. But
no, I know what you mean. Even when we were streaming yesterday, it felt more like one of those like working sessions of you and I just like talking like the latest topic. Yeah, no, it has been fun with the others for sure. Like when there's three people, a lot of times it adds a little bit more to talk about. But
definitely.
And then we have our own baggage sometimes we like to spill on the channel. So.
Yeah, I know people think that we don't like talk to each other outside of the show, that like we probably just hate each other and we show up for each other's shows and then like just don't talk the rest of the week. We actually do. We like occasionally.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like we try to force some sort of rivalry to make the stream a little more interesting, but we can never do it. It's like I think I tried to hold it against you that you're not into future UC. That it's never really been like a funny elaborate plot.
So. No, we'll come up with something that we really disagree about eventually. But yeah, for now, it's all been copacetic.
Yeah, pretty much. But no, very cool. And to see everyone already in the chat, Zionic Shadow being first. Usually Robert grabs that crown, but we've got King Dylan, James Belmont of the Belmont family, Talos Mobius, Ultronimus, Barry BB. Good to see everybody. But yeah. Fun week yesterday on your channel. Really neat stuff again of sort of a guide through modifying a 3D file, specifically a Mark II cockpit, doing it in Blender, which I'm not too familiar with. You've shown me some things, but it is cool to see you doing it live because you're having to think.
That software is crazy. So it's.
Yeah. But be able to think through the problems live, I feel like it's helpful even for me. It's very interesting, but
yeah, I appreciate that. And I love having you on to kind of call me out as I'm doing things, because if I were working in a vacuum on some of these things, I would probably either A, never finish, or B, just screw up constantly.
Oh yeah. and then wasn't it where I didn't understand a certain word and you explained it to me, like was Enogs or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Engons.
Engons. Yeah. The evil Ghostbuster twin. Exactly. Yeah. No, that was cool because we were joking about it, but it kind of did help me understand kind of the foundational way, I guess, shapes are described.
Yeah, you know, it's I love when we get into those things. Obviously, I enjoy when we're talking with another guest and we have like lots of Gundam news to talk about, but it's fun when you kind of look at how things are made and you start to understand, like, you know, oh, just because you have access to like Gundam Battle Operation 2 files doesn't mean that you can like 3D print an army of Zakus. Like, there's actually a lot of work and a lot of detailing that goes into it. And so, you know, part of what I do is I hope kind of showing people the way and saying like, hey, you know, you can, if you download these files, like you're not going to be able to do much with them, but I will teach you how to make the most out of what resources you can pull off the internet.
And I think that's pretty good too, especially if you're someone that's like just getting into 3D printing. And a lot of times it's easier if it's sort of like task-based. It's like, what should I be doing? It's like, oh, Steven's provided this and he's shown this. Let's see if I can get that to work. And then you have the Discord community, obviously, if you need to ask questions. So yeah, it's cool stuff. Another thing real quick, I was just seeing from Talos is he's actually going to be out of town for a while. I don't think he said it publicly, so I'll just say he's going to be gone for a while. So we'll miss him, but he'll be back.
We hope.
Yeah.
No, I'm really excited for him, and you know, I wish him all the best you know, for his hiatus. So
so today there's not many crazy topics that we're gonna cover. Actually, there's gonna be a lot of crazy things, but no like definitive like here's some Gundam news. We will talk about the new real grade Gundam, because I didn't really care too much about it until Steven brought up something on his show yesterday, and then I think you can even watch my mind like just realize what they're doing with this, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad that I could put you on to some of the sweeter features of this kit.
Yeah, but I think that's funny. That says something about me, how I see that they've announced a 2.0 Rogue Raider. I'm like, okay, I'll probably buy it. But like, but once, you know, I hear more about it and see some of the stuff, I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So another thing, you know, I haven't been watching any Gundam anime lately, but I've been watching that X-Men show, the X-Men 97. I will say the last two episodes have been kind of boring, but they kind of remind me of some of those older X-Men episodes where it's right, like
they're trying to capture the essence of the 90s.
Yeah, it's like I think they're balancing, okay, here's some like continual story, and then, oh, here's an episode about this character going through something. Whereas I think on this stream, I have called that out as filler, and I've learned that I shouldn't look at it that way. Maybe I'm not interested in backstory of that character for now, but it does build up the characters, and I learned to appreciate that through Japanese anime.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's definitely you can definitely tell the difference between true filler content, which is kind of like nothing content where everything kind of resets at the end of the episode. And then there's content that, you know, like you said, it goes deeper into a character's backstory and you might not realize it at the time, but you know, sometimes that ends up there's some payoff there where it's like, yeah, a few episodes down the line, there's a callback to that. And it's like, oh, now I see why there was that like strange musical episode or something.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's funny because even with like the filler episode they just had, what was cool about it was it had like a section that was like the 16-bit like action game. It was almost like the old X-Men arcade game, but like Jubilee was in it.
I
love that because that's for something that has to be filler, it's cool for it to have some sort of gimmick to it. Yeah. But then on top of that, it made me think, wow, how come that X-Men arcade game has never been ported? You know, consider that, you know, I think that when it comes to X-Men and Marvel, it's more of you can go to Disney and get the license to make a game. So I think it's just a matter of that because Konami made that game. And Konami, even though they're not good at making new games, they do re-release their old games often. Like every year there's releases. Like even right now there's physical releases of like Rocket Knight Adventure and stuff. So
licensing is funny because, and this is one of those like dad horror stories, but like, you know, my daughter has one of those Tony boxes. It's like I think we've talked about it on my stream where it's like the little magnetic figures that you can put on the box and it plays different music based on the figure that you put on there. They have Disney themed ones, right? So they have like a Princess Elsa, Princess Rapunzel, what have you. But what's interesting about it is that they don't have the licenses to the actual Disney songs. So it's a different singer singing the Disney songs because they don't have the legal rights to use the tracks from the movies, which is fascinating to me because it's like, so you have the rights to use the characters and to use their likenesses and everything, but then you can't get the rights to the actual music. So copyright is one of those things that it's like, it's deeply complex. And I think we even have that issue in Gundam too, right? Like, isn't that part of why we have SD stuff is because
it has to do, yeah, it'd be able to like combine different universes in that the context depends on, yeah, what the licensing.
Yeah,
that's funny because you brought up music, and I feel like music is the number one culprit to a lot of this. And even with this X-Men 97 cartoon, apparently it was mandated like they will pay whatever it takes to get rights to that song. And in fact, it indeed was really hard to, and they pay a lot to get it, which I think worked because I'm the type of person, and I know we've talked about this, where music is like 50% of that enjoyment of something for me. Like it puts me in. So when that first X-Men episode just played the theme song while fighting Sentinels, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. If they didn't have that, then I think the show would have been just an abject failure. I think the jury's still out on it. Like, you know, total, let's wait until the end of the season. But like, I think if they had not gotten the rights to that song.
Well, you know, what's funny. They just, announced they're going to have a season 3.
Oh, wow.
And they and season 2 isn't even released yet. And so I think like they're already in projecting, and from what I hear, this is like super popular. And I got to say, yeah, like watching it so far, this is the least, other than Andor, this is the least offensive Disney has been with a property.
I do take one bit of offense. Oh, and I was talking to my brothers about this.
Okay.
Is this is how you know it was written by Disney, is that infamous scene with Gambit in the crop top.
Oh.
The crop top doesn't bother me. Gambit being a chef also doesn't bother me. What does bother me is that of all of the Cajun Creole foods that he could have been cooking, you had him making beignets like he's Princess Tiana from The Princess and the Frog. No, no, no. He would be making some crawfish etouffee or some jambalaya. Like,
yeah, what was that? On. Was he frying ham?
What the beignets?
Yeah.
He was making donuts, basically.
Oh, yeah, beignets. I had no idea what that was. Okay. So that's funny, though. I love that.
In The Princess and the Frog is like Princess Tiana from The Princess and the Frog. Like, her big thing is that she makes these beignets with like powdered sugar on top and all this stuff.
Okay. Neat connection.
Like, Gambit would not be making desserts. Gambit would be making a main dish.
I love that. That's kind of funny because, yeah, picking at the little things. Yeah, Disney, there you go. You got to insert your print now. That's pretty good. Yeah, and there's some things that I think are interesting, like Gambit in a crop top. Like, that's a cool kind of design for the type of guy he is, you know? And and just other things in general. Even the episode from yesterday that I said I was a little disappointed in, not disappointed in like a Disneyfication of it, but just disappointed in, oh, that's just one of those episodes. But it did all the wacky things the show would do. So it's cool that Disney's not trying to be like, okay, well, let's make it where it's every episode's a little more mature or in terms of story, you know?
And I mean, even if you go back to the original, like, it makes you wonder in that first episode when Morph gets offed, is like, why would you even introduce a character like Morph just so that he can get shot by a Sentinel? And it's like, again, you get that payoff, you know, dozens of episodes later when he falls in with Mr. Sinister. Spoilers for those who haven't watched the original 90s show, but
no, that's a good point. I found a video that was recapping the show and or the series, and it came to me how often they do that in that. Yeah. They would have things happen, and then later on, even with the time travel, like, it's even if the time travel stuff was just like, okay, we'll add something and have them go back in time again, they at least wrote it in a way where they were being conscious of it and making it like, whoa, okay, so this is connected with that. And but I don't think at the time when I was a kid when I watched it, I appreciated that at all or really understood.
No, definitely not. I know I didn't.
Yeah, like, I could sometimes maybe be like, oh, that's neat. That, but I never like, wow, excellent writing. Yeah. No. But so, you know, real quick, I was showing you this before. Again, I know this is a Gundam show. This is a Gundam themed show. So this is my April 1st X-Men Explained. But no, just for fun, I bought one of those new, you know, kind of 4-inch figures, which is very neat that they're doing that, because, you know, those Gundam figures were releasing in that scale. And I was super happy about that because I like that scale. And I had
to match up, like, is Cyclops like the same height as Char? And
well, let's see. So here's a little Zeon Pilot. He might be a little bigger, but it is kind of a superhero bigger.
That's true. We call that heroic scale.
Yeah, there we go. Let me move this over.
Oh, well, of course, Wolverine would be a little shorter.
And then here is the original line that's super articulated, where, yeah, she seems way taller. But that the scaling of this, it's called Marvel Universe. They're a little off anyway. But no, it's pretty neat. So anyway, I got that because the kid in me was like, oh, Adam, look, Target exclusive. I mean, it comes with the Gambit with some effect parts to throw his cards. that's my type of thing. So
absolutely.
So have you actually then been keeping up with the show?
I'm a couple episodes behind, but I watched the first episode. I think I got like a few minutes into the second one, but yeah, I mean, otherwise, like, I think it's entertaining. It's definitely not. Yeah, I wouldn't kick it out.
Cool. Yeah. I'm pretty happy with how it turned out.
Definitely.
Which is interesting, you know, if we talk about Disney with Gundam and how, you know, Cuckoo's Dolan's Island to me felt like a Disney style movie, or if like a, in terms of the classic sort of traditional Disney storytelling, you know, because there are some, you know, mature themes, and I think they handle the comedy well, but it's mainly watching these characters go through this struggle, you know, but there's that family aspect, relationship aspect, you know, you have the orphan kids or whatever. That's a big Disney thing to have.
True.
And it's cool, you know, like, so it's interesting. Yeah. Like in Japan, they're doing the thing, right, where Disney Plus will get anime,
which is kind of cool.
Like, yeah. And I feel like Cuckoo's Dolan's Island, even in the US, would be perfect for Bandai to be like, hey, Disney, partnership deal. Could we put this and see what happens? I don't know. Because, you know, they're now combining all their Hulu stuff into Disney Plus. So it's going to start having more. It's going to, they're going to have the new Punisher show coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that they are reviving the old Netflix stuff. It's like, you know, who would have thought that like the more adult themed Netflix Marvel shows were going to perform better than the Disney Plus Marvel shows? Like,
oh, wow. Is that, I didn't know if that was the case, but is that the case? That,
I mean, I would say they have to have, right? Like, I think Daredevil was fantastic, and like the Punisher series was good. Luke Cage was awesome, like the Defenders, that whole thing. I really enjoyed Jessica Jones. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't get into things like She-Hulk, or I mean, is that really the only, well, they did like the What If cartoons on Disney Plus, but
which is interesting because I found out that the people that made What If also are making X-Men.
Interesting.
So it's like they're same, because it was either a producer or an animator, someone that would be more into the weeds, was saying how they were evolving their work from that to that. So that's really neat. Like it's the first time it seems like Marvel animation is actually now a serious thing, like how DC is known for its animation. And you know, real quick, Ultronimus said something earlier and it just popped back up, about saying that it was ported, that X-Men arcade game. If you got details on that, let me know, because I'm curious what platform that was, because then I can emulate it.
Yeah, for sure. So this isn't that arcade game that was on the Genesis, was it? The one that you could play as Wolverine, Cyclops, Gambit, or Nightcrawler?
No, this was an arcade-only game, and it was, I want to say there was a six-player version, but I could be wrong. But I just remember the first time I saw it in 1993, I was in San Jose, California at a drive-in theater. I think I was seeing Army of Darkness. And we went to the arcade, and I remember just seeing that X-Men cabinet, and like, I'm pretty sure it was six players. And I was like, oh my God, like this is the coolest thing. Cause the only, but I don't think either I knew the X-Men animated series by then, or there was like these VHS shows that came out before where Wolverine had the brown costume.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it was kind of the same, it's supposed to be like in the same thing, but I remember seeing that play, but then you would rarely see that arcade game really everywhere. And I went to the arcades a lot when I was a kid, but not like a whole ton. Usually it was like, oh, games arcades, can't wait for it to come out on Genesis or Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you have a lot of arcades where you grew up? Because I did not.
I did. There was a bowling alley down the street for me that was the main place I would go and always play arcades. And then like, man, the late 90s, they built this like mega arcade at a mall here, but it only lasted like a couple of years, because that was the time.
Bummer.
And I would go there because they would have all the Capcom and SNK fighting games that, you know, I remember, I want to say I played Guilty Gear there. And then I think that's what got me to buy a PlayStation 2 or something. Eventually I was like, oh, I got it.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, we had a couple of cabinets at our local movie theater, but I have to say that that is the absolute worst place to put video game cabinets, because you know, when my family would go out to watch movies together, you know, my parents would take us all out, take all the kids out. It's like, we're going to watch the movie. Like, we show up like within 15 minutes of the movie starting. So there's not enough time for me to like log hours and hours, you know, playing House of the Dead or anything like that.
Yeah. I guess the main times that I would do that is when my mom wanted to go bowling, because she was a big bowler. And so I would just hang out at the arcade at the bowling alley. And yeah, that's where I played a lot of Galaga. I remember when Virtua Fighter first came out and it was like, oh my God. And like learning that. I remember when I first saw the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade, it was like 1989 at that bowling alley. And I saw it and there was too many people playing and I couldn't play. And then one day I got a chance to play, but I died. And then I just started crying. Cause like, it's so awesome at that age to see this, to play. And then you have to like pay money.
And then there's the stack of quarters there. That's like people waiting to take your spot.
And yeah, I remember at a grocery store, we were checking out and then on the way out, they had the Ninja Turtle arcade game right there. And I got to play it and then I died and I just was crying.
Yeah, that's
and that was the time when I would go home and get cardboard and make like a fake like TV and then cardboard cut out Ninja Turtles on popsicle sticks that I could move around on the sides.
That is so funny. Like to me, that is such a like quintessential gamer thing to do.
Yeah.
Like I will make my own video games.
You know, and that was funny. So that was, you know, 1989, 90. And to be honest, I played the video games, but I didn't really care about video games that much. It was more of if there was an IP that had like a video game, or because I remember when Mario 2 first came out, I would play Mario at a friend's house. And Mario 2 was like, this doesn't look like Mario. Because you know how Mario 2 is all different? And I was like, what is this even? So I would just play it as like its own thing. I didn't even think like, oh, this is Mario. And it wasn't until Sonic. I saw how fast he was and how cool he was. And I was like,
oh, yeah.
Now I'm into video games. Like, which is funny because I remember that bowling alley had a Sonic arcade game. It was like the first Sonic. It had like another character you could choose also, like something that was added later on into the other stuff. But that bowling alley still exists, and there's two rooms of arcades, and now it's just pool tables. No more arcades.
Dang.
Oh,
I know that the barcade scene is taking off, like especially around here. There's like what used to be a warehouse district is now like just nothing but breweries. And like there's one brewery that does, you know, the kind of like the lawn games, like they have giant Jenga, they have cornhole, that type of thing. But then there's a barcade, and I wasn't too thrilled with the game selection that they had there. There was a bar that I used to go to in college that actually did have Street Fighter 2. It had the TMNT game, and it had one other cabinet that I was like, this is the spot. But I don't think it's around anymore. It was a pretty filthy spot. When I walked in there, the description that I always tell people is like, it smelled like the 90s in there. And if you know, that's
just enough smoke, because that was when it was ending.
It was like smoke, maybe a little bit of urine. Like there's like there's a very distinctive, like this is the 90s I'm smelling here.
No, that's funny you saying that, because I feel like, you know, especially our generation, if we were to associate a scent with the 90s, it would be cigarette smoke. Because I remember that transition where places would smell like cigarette smoke that allowed it. And then growing up, it was like places were banning it. And then it was like,
do you remember like the hybrid restaurants where it was like you would have like the smoking section and the non-smoking section?
Wow.
Like,
that doesn't really exist anymore.
No, because it used to be, it's like you had to have two separate ventilation systems or two separate ACs in order to accommodate that. And who has that?
Dude, it has been that triggered a memory of smoking or non-smoking.
Exactly.
God, and I would be like, memory. I don't care wherever I could sit. Wow, that's very interesting. I bet there's other places that still have that where maybe like a lot of their patrons or I don't know, you know, people could do whatever, I guess. Free. Talus is saying we still have those sections. Yeah. But he also has robots. I'm not joking. In Greece, apparently there is a statue of a automaton or something that was part of their mythology. It's pretty badass.
But I know a lot of Greek mythology, but I don't know anything about automatons. So I'm going to have to get a lesson from Talos on that.
Well, and what it is it's one of those things where the way myths are explained, it sounds like some fantasy, but it's trying to explain science. How do you explain a robot to people that don't understand technology? You know?
Exactly.
So, ancient Greek mobile suits. That's where his name comes from. Talos, guardian of Crete.
Nice.
Real quick. So we have some of those bars around here. Not a lot, though.
Oh, like the barcade style.
The ones near me are more further into the city where it's probably not safe to be driving late. Anyway, you have that.
Yeah.
Going to the bar. But there is a retro toy shop and game shop I've talked about that's like close by. Right across from it, like it's like 5 feet, like they're really like across from each other, is an arcade where you can go and you just like pay $7 and you can just play. I want to say it's all you want.
I mean, honestly, I think that the ultimate restaurant idea would be if we had like a restaurant that had booths and in the center of the booth was a TV. So I'm thinking like a corner booth where you've got like, you know, seats on left and right, a TV that faces the people, and then there's consoles in the booth, and so you can sit, order drinks, order food, sit there, play video games with your friends, and like, you know, like you said, it's like maybe you play all night, but maybe there's like a fee for like, you know, you get so many tokens or whatever, kind of like bowling, right? Because like bowling is that where it's like, oh, you can play so many games or you can play for so many hours.
That idea because, you know, for people wanting to go out and socialize and do something, sometimes I would like to socialize with gaming, but it's like, okay, who's going to whose house?
Yeah.
Who has the equipment? And, you know, yeah, if you were at like a restaurant where you could choose a booth to sit in that has like maybe screens that fold up out and can turn or something.
Yeah.
But it has the emulators on there. So it's like you could
even better
anything. Like it could be a group of friends that just want to play, the TMNT arcade.
Couch co-op all the way.
Or what if it's a group of friends that want to sign into Fortnite and just play some Fortnite at a bar or whatever? That's a pretty cool idea.
Yeah.
You need to do this. Okay, keep me updated.
All right. New Patreon tier.
that's amazing. Well, cool. Okay, so real quick, we're going to jump into one of the topics we're going to talk about.
Yeah, let's talk some Gundam.
Yeah, let's talk some Gundam on this Gundam show.
Right, the Gundam show.
with this, just real quick, looking at that, the real grade version 2.0. So again, I was a little dismissive at first, not in a bad way, but more of, okay, another granddaddy.
Yeah.
But there are some things. First, the first main thing that you pointed out to me, and I hope they have that detailed here. I don't know if this one does.
I think it was the previous slide. Is it that one? No. Huh. Or is it the one where there's like the image of the fingers? Is that it?
Huh. No. I wonder if it's not on this website, but...
You
failed me again, Hobby Link Japan. No, but really what it is so where the core fighter is, and they showed this in a promotional shot, there is a point of articulation, which, like you brought up on your stream yesterday, is a lot of these mobile suits that have like that gimmick, the flight gimmick, whether it's they're transforming or it's a core block that's in them, that limits the range of motion in the that torso area, whether that's, I mean, not only just to kind of a bend forward or back, but even it kind of inhibits that swivel.
Yeah.
But this has a point of articulation at sort of the midpoint, I guess, of it in general, where like, I guess the end of the cockpit, the back of the cockpit would like move or go into the back of the core fighter.
Yeah. It's very interesting the way it's designed. Like it's almost like the core fighter like snaps in half or something like that, where it's, yeah.
Yeah. And so, to me, that's amazing because this is a way to get the best of both worlds, which is a fully articulated, you know, granddaddy Gundam. That's a real grade. Okay, so we're talking about these highly detailed ones that are supposed to be known for their articulation anyway. And then on top of that, having that fully functional core fighter in there, you know, to come out. So,
yeah.
But I think this speaks to kind of a greater thing that we want to see out of, you know, Gunpla, whether it is transformable or not. Because I even think there are some Gunpla that don't have necessarily interesting gimmicks, but there's some weird articulation. You know, so we see this solution they have for something like this, where it's a core fighter that comes out. Could that be applied to a Zeta type Gunpla? I mean, because I think you would have to be more than just, I don't know, could they potentially add some more articulation? And then maybe as you're pulling out the, because with all the Zetas so far, they seem to be a very similar sort of thing, where the sides of the abdomen come out, the head goes down, and you kind of lock it. The front moves up. So it has something to do with this, the
somewhere
side
in the torso.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the complication with the Zeta in particular, and ironically, this is actually kind of addressed in that Perfect Grade Zeta manual, where it says like Camille's the one that came up with this idea, is how do you take the wings that are on the back in robot mode and then get them down to the bottom in flight mode? And so, like, it's funny because the Anaheim engineering division, they were like, oh, well, he should just pick it up over his head and pull it down in front of him. And that was like, oh, well, you know, he would have to slow down while he's operating the mobile suit, and it causes all this like G forces and all these issues. And it was Camille's idea to say, no, 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 we're going to cut the flying armor in half, and the wings are going to fold up under the armpits, and that is how you get the flying armor to deploy at the front of the Zeta Gundam. And it's like, okay, that's brilliant in an anime where like physics don't apply, but then like, how do you make that into a real thing? And so you end up usually, like, I mean, most of the Zeta Gundams that transform, they have like a flimsy, like maybe like a double jointed bar that attaches the wing to the back.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's always off.
Yeah.
It's like
you can never get it to like look right.
Because there's not a smooth transition. It's almost like the other option would be have it removable. Like, and that's a good point. Like, what if they're able to come up with a way to do it where there's more of it that's removable, but then there's less moving pieces?
Yeah.
I mean, that could be something. Okay. And let me ask this though. Would you prefer like a future Zeta kit is just, here's the figure, here's the Wave Rider, or should they continue down making each one some crazy spaghetti dinner of a transformation?
Yeah, I mean, if they came as one thing, then I think that would be kind of cool, like one kit that came with both options, because I think that's what they do with like a lot of the 0083 kits, like GPO3 comes with the core fighter and the kit, and I think the GPO1 does as well.
Yeah, that's right.
But conversely, you know, it's like if you look at the Cross Silhouette Zeta, for instance, they have that option parts set that allows you to transform it into the Wave Rider, but like once you transform it into the Wave Rider, like you can't transform it back. It takes forever because you have to actually like disassemble the kit. That's like the worst of both worlds.
But that's a good point, because, you know, maybe it depends on the target audience, but are you transforming for the sake of this being a fully functional, you know, mobile suit that is going by the animation where it can transform, you know, or is the transforming for the sake of this is an enjoyable experience? Like, I have done transformations that seem like it's part of playing with it. And I've done transformations that seem like, okay, this is like a task you have to do in order to get its other state.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, because I feel like with Gunpla, I mean, what do you think?
And you're a big Jobby fan, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, Jobby the Hong, obviously, you know, when he's reviewing a Transformers action figure, like, he almost always skips through the transformation process unless there's something unique to talk about with that. But it's like, man, the higher-end Transformers, like the Collector's Edition Transformers toys, they're not, like, friendly to transform.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It is... I would almost never transform those things if I had them. I mean, I barely transform my Zetas when.
Exactly. In fact, the only one, the only ones that I can transform and have fun with are non-UC. It's like wing kits or something, or seed. Also, yeah, like that new seed from Zionic Shadow and Sieg New York, the Freedom. Yeah.
And I think that that's part of like those new designs is like the Zeta Gundam being the first transformable Gundam in Gundam. And it's like the most complex versus, you know, things like the Wing Zero. It's like, oh, the torso rotates and that's it. Or like the Epion, the legs fold over. That's it.
Yeah. And even King Dylan is saying one of the Gaza suits. I don't see E. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they basically just ab crunch and go. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, the Zeta Gundam is a particularly, I don't want to, it's not a poor design because it's perfect.
Yes, it's weird. It's like I'm only talking bad, or I feel like we're only talking down about it because we care and like the idea about it so much.
Exactly. And I think that that's where it comes from. It comes from a place of passion and a place of, you know, it's like we want it to work so badly.
Yeah, because I have it up. I have my master grades on a shelf up here. And whenever I glance at it, I am the edges, the proportions. It's just, even if it's not like a preferred way, it's still done very well and looks excellent. So.
But hey, okay, this RX-78 could be a step in that direction, right?
So that's, yeah, and that's what I want to get to next, because it seems like really the only main thing about this is adding that ab crunch, a little bit of change of proportions. I do like the
no hyperhammer.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that that Chick-fil-A meme. Have you seen that one going around? Like no Chick-fil-A sauce, no hyperhammer.
Okay, I haven't seen that. But so the other interesting thing though about this is if we're looking at the proportions, I was trying to zoom in a little more, like the vent. The way the proportions of the vent, kind of the head having a more bulbous look to it, like there's different iterations in which we get a design of the Granddaddy, even though they're all pretty similar.
Yeah.
This seems to evoke something very interesting. Like, I think the head is like prime Granddaddy looking head. The shoulders seem to be a little longer or bigger. By just a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
Definitely. Now, do you like the proportions on this version?
I do. I feel like it, I do like it, but I feel like it's slightly going beyond, and I don't know how to explain this, like more of the slimmer traditional look of the RX-78-2 being like this early design type of mobile suit, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm really just picking at whatever I really can. and I think it's just because of seeing the RX-78-2 in the anime, like those proportions really work, or Origin. And so what this really is, you know, the real grade is just an interpretation. And I think it looks good. Do you like it?
I'm a huge fan. I think I typically gravitate towards these sort of like bulky, chunky proportions. I like it a lot, you know, but like you, like I can appreciate the Origin designs, but they are a little sleeker, a little more slender.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that too is, and I think that's what's the fun with the real grades is the mechanical engineering of building it, because I feel like with a real grade, there's a lot more pieces, but I feel like there's a lot of deliberateness with how they want you to build it. You know, as opposed to some high grades where it's like, well, here's some random shapes to slap together.
You know? Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it's very, I guess, purpose driven. And I guess so now they haven't released any details about like the inner frame gimmick about this, because I know that the first couple of real grades, it was like, oh, the inner frame is like completely one piece, and like, you know, you break out the inner frame and then you're basically putting armor on the outside of it. But like more recent real grades have been, you know, you're kind of constructing them from scratch. So I'm wondering if this is adopting that newer style of real grade where it's like, yes, you do construct the inner frame, but it's not, it's kind of more like the Perfect Great Unleashed, right? Like, because that's the same way.
Yeah. And I kind of see that with this, because even with this picture of the inner frame, we do see these layers, but we see some areas where the layers wouldn't ever really be one congruent piece. What word am I looking for? You know what I mean? Instead of, like, it seems like it's kind of, yes, separated into bits, which I wonder if that was the intention when scaling back that inner frame idea, was that kind of made it just kind of hard to get the engineering right.
Oh, definitely. Now, if they were able to recycle that inner frame for more kits, then I can see them using it more. But, like, I think part of the problem is that they made the inner frame before they had, like, a family of kits that were going to be able to fit that frame.
I see.
And, I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding, where it's, like, once you got to, like, some of those mid to late UC mobile suits and, like, the Zazabi and the new Gundam, like, you can't use the same frame.
Yeah,
that's RX-78 for those. Like,
well, okay, here's a question then. What would you want as another? Well, one, do you like the Real Grade line?
Yeah, I really do. I think that they are an awesome,
to me, it's a different type of experience, building experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that, you know, because you started with a Real Grade, I think that Real Grades are a great jumping on point for people that want a more satisfying build experience.
Yep.
I think that if people just want the kit and they want the finished product, like, go HG all the way, because like, it's going to be easy. You'll knock out the build pretty quickly. And then for, like, the professional builders, obviously Master Grade, Perfect Grade, all that stuff. But, like, for someone who really wants to enjoy the building process, Real Grade is awesome.
Yeah, it's another way to...
If you buy the Zeta.
Okay, well, then that brings up another point, which that might be the answer or might not be. What would be, and chat, let me know what you think, what would be another good Real Grade 2.0 and why? Because I think from the Real Grades I have, I would say they're all good but one. And that is the new Gundam.
Wow.
You
don't like the new Gundam.
Yeah, it looks cool, and it was kind of an easy build, but it's fin funnel system.
Snaps off easily.
Yeah. It's horrible. The fin system it has is a joke.
That's funny, because people typically rate the new Gundam as one of, like, the top three or top five.
Well, it's because other than that fin rack, it is an action. It is a Robot Spirits figure when you build it.
Nice.
Like, it is like, it's a great looking figure with high articulation, doesn't fall apart except for that fin rack. And the reason.
So you're saying get the. What is it? What's the FF version? The
one funnel.
that's a Real Grade. It's basically the same kit.
Yeah, and so that's what's interesting. Like, it's a great figure, but that rack on the back, and so it poses multiple problems. One, it could just be when I would have it on a stand, and it would have the racks. Sometimes they would kind of move, or if something. Yeah, touches it, like, it breaks off.
Distribution issue.
Yeah, and then it will knock into other things. It's like, it's one of those things where when I go to put it on display, it's like, well, I need to have it have enough clearance, because the back could fall off, could hit something else. It's like, I don't want to have to think about that when I'm storing or standing up my high grade or real grade new. Because other than that, I feel like all those Real Grades have been awesome. Even the one Xionic Shadow got me of the
Epion.
Oh yeah, that is.
Oh, that thing is awesome. I haven't finished building it yet, but.
Oh yeah. It's because I even have it out, and it's not even with a display of anything related to it, because I just like what it is on its own, which is an interesting thought, because it's almost like, when it comes to the engineering of these Real Grades, they can really do something special to make something more interesting than you might think first. But what would be a 2.0 in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's probably a dumb answer to say, like, I would want a Zeta 2.0, but, like, I really do want them to keep cracking at making a Zeta that transforms and does it well and doesn't lose all of its articulation as a result of that. But if I had to give an answer that's not the typical answer... I don't know if this would be a 2.0, but I would want to see like a Goof custom. Because they never made any real grade Goofs, did they?
Yeah, that seems like that would be an obvious one too. Just thinking of, well, I guess, you know, it's weird what they pick sometimes, and what they don't pick, like how they did a lot of the GPO series, which I thought was strange, but I wonder if because GPO fans are, because if it's sort of the nature of the GPO series kind of being like a Top Gun thing, F-18 model kit, and then making those real grade maybe seem to make sense in that regard.
That's a good point. And, you know, it makes me question like kind of everything about the real grade line because, you know, it's like they made GPO-1 and like the full burner version. They didn't do a GPO-2, did they?
No, of a real grade, I don't think so. That would
Or GPO-3. So like you basically have a 3. You had the hero kits, but you didn't have the villain kits. Whereas with like the Gundam, like you had the Gundam, you had Sharzaku. They didn't do a Gelgoog, but they did do Zigok. The Zigok.
Oh, the Zigok.
Fantastic. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think that if they perfected the real grade line, it was early in the days. It was like with the Zigok. But then, you know, obviously I know a lot of people love like the Sinanju and some of those later kits. But yeah, I mean, they never came out with like a full family of real grades the way that they do with high grades.
You know what? That's a good point because I feel like a lot of those crazier design suits lend themselves well to the real grade look because even a full armor unicorn is kind of an extreme mobile suit, you know, in a way. And so the Zagok as well and a Hygog would be an excellent real grade because of, again, how kind of crazy and strange it is.
Seeing like the interior components of a Gelgoog would be awesome because you very rarely get to see the internals of a Gelgoog, even like with the master grade versions. It's like,
yeah, that's right.
I would love this level of detail for a Gelgoog.
Yeah, see, I think that's a good point, especially because one of the main characters piloted a Gelgoog, and that's, you know, I think that makes it kind of a, if they have the Zagok and the Zaku too, but not the Gelgoog, I'd feel like that would be next. You know, it would be interesting to see other things like an Alex, a real grade Alex, you know, because I feel like with that Choban armor, I think there's opportunity there to really make use of the real grade. Like, because I think
like
the
layered Choban armor.
Yes.
Yeah.
And making it where it's going to be more, I think it's going to be better with articulation because I haven't messed with the high grade Alex, but I have the master grade and I have the robot spirits. And while you can put the armor on, it's not one-to-one with the show because there's some areas that it needs to be able to move.
Right.
And stuff. So I wonder if a real grade will be able to be more accurate.
Yeah, I mean, the high grade's okay. It's not fantastic. But yeah, I mean, you have the same issue where like the Chobum armor kind of has these weird allowances to allow it to still move.
And so what I think Bandai really needs to do is kind of finish out the mainline Gundam real grades, because we got the new, the high new, and then I think next is like we got Unicorn. So then, and Narrative didn't though. Narrative,
no.
Okay. So Narrative F91 Victory. Okay, G Savior. Now we're
there. We go. Well, and I wonder if that could be where they're going with this like new line of real grades, because you know, similar to the way the first high grade came out in what 1990. That was like before they revived the high grade line in the early 2000s, and then they revived it again in like 2015 for the revive line. So like they've reinvented high grades over the years, and I wonder if like maybe that's where they're going with this. It's like we took our first shot with the real grades, now we're kind of going to double down on them and say like this is the new HG going forward, is we're going to do everything in real grade.
That's interesting because I've thought about that with like the entry grades that have been coming out where they just seem like a pretty nice high grade, which is weird. So yeah, I think you're right in the direction they're able to move with that. So that's interesting. Entry grade, real grade, high grade. I mean, cause they're all that, you know, the same scale. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm curious what they're marketing or, you know, what the demographics are for each one. And how much is the entry grade more of their like maybe marketing material? It's more of the promotional line they have where these are cheap and easy and could get you into it.
And that's why they had the Law Gundam, right? Is it's like,
yeah. It's the Law, what, the Strike, and then the new, I think, and Arc 72, like just the basic popular ones.
Exactly.
To kind of get started.
Now, if we're going to go crazy on like conspiracies, when we're looking at the proportions of this real grade that's coming out,
yeah,
my speculation is that this is going to be what the Gundam in the live action Gundam movie looks like. Because to me, these proportions look just like, you know, it's still the RX-78. It's not the new Gundam that's from that promotional image that we saw, what, 2 years ago now?
Yeah, I know.
But the shoulder size and the head size and everything about it looks like that Gundam, that silhouette that we saw. But that
No, I think you're right. Because, yeah, I was calling out the shoulders before. I feel like the shoulders are wider or longer than typical for the Granddaddy, and that's what it looked like in the promo shot. Yeah. And the vents, really bulbous and prominent vent on the side. We saw that same sort of thing.
Because everyone said that it looked like kind of like a cross between the Alex and like the GP-01, right? Was the consensus about that promo image. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that this looks like a RX-78 in that scale.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're going back to proportions and you talk stability, like it's built that way. Especially
it's built more like a realistic Gundam.
Yeah. Like a real grade, if you will.
Oh, yeah. If only we had a term for that.
No, that's cool. Well, yeah, no, that's a good thought, man. That just gets me excited because every day I am waiting for them to drop. And I bet it's going to happen either right before or right after Requiem for Vengeance, we'll get an update.
Yeah.
At this point,
I won't even be disappointed if they announce Timothy Chalamet in it.
I mean, honestly, that's interesting because that would be good for the Gundam movie. And that's the thing to consider. Like, I can do my fan casting all day, but what if they pick people that are going to get people to the movies that are going to get... And it's crazy seeing, you know, like Warner Brothers with Dune... And then Godzilla and King Kong, I think there was another movie, like they're just doing really good in theaters with these movies. And it's not hard to make a Gundam movie that's in the same, around the same tone of either Dune 2 or they're both very opposite sci-fi films. But it's really just showing, you know, you put some effort and time into a movie.
I think that, you know, obviously the superhero fatigue has kind of settled in with movie-going audiences. Yeah. But it's not like sci-fi fatigue. I think that, you know, clearly the success of Dune and the Godzilla movies recently show that, like, people are still into, like, big, big budget action pictures. But, like, they just want something different. And I think that Gundam could be that different.
Yeah, and I like that you brought up the sci-fi aspect, like, as opposed to the superhero genre. Because I feel like... historically, in a way, or like a superhero movie is either going to be a sci-fi movie or a fantasy movie, you know, like, and I feel like sci-fi movies almost feel like they have to be superhero movies, and we don't get many sci-fi movies, but then we get something like Dune 2, which I still haven't seen, but I bet it's amazing. I enjoyed the first to a degree, and I heard this is better, so...
Well, there you go.
I'm going to go there.
I probably won't see it. My wife and I fell asleep both times that we tried to watch the first Dune. So that's not a good sign.
Yeah, like, to me, that first Dune movie that Denis Villeneuve made is, like, a great movie to be made. But it doesn't do exactly what I would want it to do. Like, if I was in charge of that, I would have scaled it back a little bit. Like, there is interesting stuff, but you can cut that out. And a lot of the interesting stuff to me would do better as a TV series because of
that is a very good observation. And so I have to ask you this then. Yeah. Did you see Rebel Moon?
I didn't finish it.
Yeah. Do you think that Rebel Moon would have been better served as a theatrical release instead of a streaming platform release?
No, and the reason I say this is because I was watching some interviews with Zack Snyder, and he was talking about how Netflix was like, yeah, first make the movie you want to make, and then we'll cut it, because I guess the idea is he would have his, the I guess the Netflix version, and then the part two, and then a combination of both that's like very long.
Okay.
Showing me that that would have been better served as a TV series. And I've never watched Game of Thrones. I can mm-hmm. get into it, but I think I would like it now that, like, for instance, I'm watching Shogun right now. It's amazing. Yeah. And I watched The Warrior recently. Amazing. And what do they have in common? It's drama between families, but like it's colored with badass action.
Yeah.
And so with Dune, you know, watching Dune, there's so many badass world building elements, but you're having to go through the character development, because that's like what is the central to the plot is these characters and how they're interacting with each other in terms of the world. And so, yeah, I think Dune is better served, especially with Denis Villeneuve doing it, as a series instead of a movie. The yeah. other thing too is I'm disappointed that they just reimagined the David Lynch film instead of just doing their yeah. own thing. Like that artist before David Lynch was going to make it made these crazy wild designs for Dune.
Yeah.
So we know it exists ideas for Dune that don't have to be part of like what that first movie was, the original.
True. Well, I never watched the like Children of Dune series on Sci-Fi Channel, but I heard yeah. that was like, you know, obviously closer to the book interpretations.
Oh, interesting. So. Yeah, I don't know. And also, I haven't read the book. But again, something like Dune, Shogun, there's these similarities where it's, you know, Game of Thrones. Like if yeah. you have a story where it's about these different families or anything, these different groups of people that have hierarchies that then have to interact with each other, that is like kind of the grounded basis that make these things yeah. addicting. It's
the
just
politique.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just, what is it colored with that can pull you in? Shogun pulls me in because of samurai. I love samurai. Right.
Did you watch the original Shogun?
No, I didn't even know that existed until this came out, and I heard it was kind of based on the book, but also a remake of yeah. the old show. Did you watch yeah. it?
Yeah, my dad was a huge fan, and he bought me the DVD set, and he was like, look, you love anime so much, watch this, and by the time you're done watching it, you will have, like, working knowledge of how to speak Japanese. Because basically the main character, like, you know, is this white guy that's in Japan.
Yeah.
Or I guess having Portuguese. But,
yeah. But English, yeah. but he knows Portuguese. Like, that, yeah. I don't know if that's different than from the book or the original, but in this new one. I'm going to have to check it out then. Because I love that sometimes watching, like sometimes I'll show my wife a movie from the early 90s and you know, she's near my age and yeah. she'll be like, is this old? I'm like, what?
Are and, you old?
But then I'm showing her Columbo and then she's nice. Like, oh yeah, this is good. And I feel like that's what stands the test of time is like how good something was.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so to that end, I would suggest, yes, watch Game of Thrones, but like, I don't know, stop after like season three.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now,
and I know that you're not big on like fantasy, but like, I think that Game of Thrones in particular, the series doesn't do a whole lot with fantasy for most of the first couple seasons. It's
interesting.
Yeah. Which I think kind of part of what makes Shogun so appealing is that it's not like fantasy. It's like, you know, it's set in real world.
It's almost like a documentary.
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah. Oh, so, and that's kind of how that Game of Thrones is. It's almost like a documentary into their world and then learning these characters and like how they interact.
Yeah. I mean, the first season, you're not getting like any magic, any weirdness. Like it is like,
except for like grounded zombies. Right.
Yes and no, but like, you know, that's
I remember I'm seeing that and I was like, eh, okay, well, I might have to check it out then.
Yeah, if you ignore the first 15 minutes, then there's nothing. But okay. The first 15 minutes is like a basically, I don't know, a horror movie. But
oh, okay. Well, man, maybe I'll be checking that out. Yeah, well, my wife and I need something else to watch, but
there you go.
That just about does it for this episode of the Gundam Explained Show. Thanks for everyone that joined and that was in the chat. Ultronimus, please get with me later
about that X-Men game.
I'm so excited about that, actually. Yeah, this was fun. I had a lot of fun. Hey, I want to throw it out there. If anyone has any interesting topics they want to cover on the show, or maybe even pitch me a reason to be on to talk about something, let me know. GundamExplained@gmail.com or hit me up in Discord. Also, yeah, check the links in the description. We supported the channel, but also Steven's stuff. So you can check out the stream yesterday if you haven't. And then I guess we'll see each other again next week.
Sounds good. Cheers, everybody.
All right. Yeah, see y'all later.